KLYT Broadcast Studio. This is ABQ Connect.
Hey, thanks for coming into the broadcast today. Most of the hour, we're going to be spending with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation. So we hope to have you with us for most of the hour. We'll catch up with Paul and posts from his blog at Errors of Enchantment. Tomorrow on the broadcast, of course, our Friday financial update and our Heritage Foundation update. But let's bring you up to speed on Easter. If you haven't made plans for Easter Sunday, a reminder that everyone, at least 40,000 or plus, whatever the capacity is at University Stadium, even standing room only, would love to see out there. I think the most I've ever seen out at the stadium for sunrise service, honestly, we were talking about this the other day. Someone said, oh, come on. No, I, you know, kind of did a head count as best I could being out there, you know, over the years. Maybe one year, the crowd kind of filled those stands that face east and wrapped around the end zone. About 20 to 22,000 people at the most I've seen. It'd be great to see 25,000 people at sunrise service Easter Sunday at 7:30. And there'll be music with Mac Brock leading worship, Calvary MSC along with him. And then, of course, that message from Pastor Skip Heitzig, the life-changing gospel message he'll bring. And just what a joy it is to see so many walking down the stands who've made decisions for Christ after hearing the gospel at the sunrise service. If you want details about the service, go to EasterABQ.com. Now, leading up to Easter, of course, the Good Friday service at Calvary Church, which, by the way, as you know, from years past, Vitalant will be here for a blood drive, and we don't have it posted on our website, but we will shortly, where you can just click on the Vitalant banner. We'll have it there shortly, and you can sign up to give blood. I would love to see 100 people sign up for that. I know in years past, I think we've gotten close to 60 or 80, so it would be great to see a lot of folks being a part of that on a Good Friday at Calvary Church in the parking lot. Starts at 8 o'clock, that blood drive with Vitalant. But here's something else happening actually Thursday and then Good Friday. The Gospel of Mark presented by Gregory Elder. It's at the Peggy Ann Finley Arts Center, Black Box Theater at Bosque School in Albuquerque, that Thursday and then Good Friday, April 18th and 19th at 7 p.m., come on out with the whole family. Experience the powerful portrayal of the Gospel of Mark as Gregory Elder brings each character to life while preserving the authenticity of God's Word. He'll do that along with a piano accompaniment, music composed and performed by Michelle Mook. It's a free event for that Gospel of Mark presentation. However, reservations are required. They have limited space there. Here's how you email folks to get your reservations. Email itellyouthetruth@icloud.com. That's itellyouthetruth@icloud.com. And hey, as I mentioned, Paul Gessing in studio with us for the full hour today. And you know, Paul, unless you have an objection, I'm going to open up the phone lines for folks to have comments or questions about the different things we're covering. Sound good?
Sounds great.
338-5790. It's area 505-338-5790. And with that, I welcome Paul Gessing into studio. You've been busy on Errors of Enchantment, Paul.
Yeah, been busy in a lot of ways, but glad the session is done. The 60-day session has concluded, and the governor is signing bills until tomorrow. I believe the time is noon, but tomorrow's the day, Friday of this week. And she's signed a lot so far. We'll see if there's some bills that she vetoes or possibly does what she has the power to do, which is to line item veto certain bills. So that means to take out out of a bigger bill, a few specific provisions that she may or may not, well, that obviously she would not like them if she vetoes.
Now, if she line items stuff, does it need to go back for another vote then?
No, not directly. It could be brought up in the next legislative session.
Okay, so she just does some, gets in there and does some editing.
Yes, and it's one of those things that a lot of people in Washington have talked about doing, giving governors the power to do. I certainly would be of the opinion that it may or may not be a good thing, but it's definitely not. It's not a solution to your problems. The governor, as she does with many of her other powers, this governor tends to not make good decisions, in my estimation, and can be abusive in her power. So you got to have the right people in office. That's what it comes down to, is voting for reasonableness, sanity, limited government, individual liberty, all the things that we fight for at the Rio Grande Foundation.
Yeah, it's always fun to kind of watch, too, you know, on a state level. You know, we see people that are totally fine with the unilateral decisions at the executive level, while at the federal level, some people, you know, it's so partisan. You know, what is good is to go back through and, you know, each session, I was going to actually say, you know, this is your busy season, you know, when the session's happening, and to make it, you know, I mean, I can't imagine it's fun. It might be rewarding. But I thought you got to think of some kind of game like the bracket with the NCAA tournament, where you kind of have an idea which bills are out there and which ones are going to advance. And but it, you know, even in maybe the worst years, Paul, there's always something kind of good to look back on and say, well, we can be thankful for this.
Yeah, in my estimation, this was by no means the worst year that we've had. I would say that was probably 2019, when you had 8 years of a Republican governor who was kind of stopping, I think, a lot of the craziness in Santa Fe. 2019 was the first year of Michelle Lujan Grisham and a Democrat majority legislature. That was a really, really tough year. Now, from a process perspective and just respecting each other in the legislature, and the progressives have gotten very, very far down the road to the left. It's getting tougher and tougher up there, as many involved in the process will tell you. But the Rio Grande Foundation was actively engaged and involved. Many of the topics that we're talking about, you can, of course, find at heirsofenchantment.com. RioGrandeFoundation.org is our, among other things, our Freedom Index results, which you can find at that website as well. Our Freedom Index is where we track the votes, we rate the bills, and if it gets a floor vote, it has points associated with it. If it impacts your individual freedom, limited governments, constitutional liberties, those kinds of things. So you can find out for yourself who those folks are that are voting for your interests up in Santa Fe.
Hey, Paul, before we go through the details of one of the blog posts you had on what didn't happen that should have this session, I did want to back up a little bit and ask you, there was an event you had at the Continuing Education, or the CNM, I think just off I-25 here recently, about healthcare in New Mexico. Can you give us an update on that?
Yeah, well, that dovetails in with one of the things that should have happened, so it's a very nice place to start, which is, unfortunately, while it does dovetail nicely for our conversation, it's not what people want to hear, which is that nothing was done during this legislative session to address the big issue of medical providers and the lack thereof. There was a lot of conversation as the session got kicked off about how are we going to get more doctors and medical providers here to New Mexico. There were a couple of different big picture ideas that we supported at the Rio Grande Foundation. Not every idea considered or even adopted was a good idea in our estimation, but two of the big ones, one is a suite of bills dealing with different occupations in the medical field to enter New Mexico into a compact basically saying that if a nurse, if a doctor, if a practitioner in a variety of fields is registered and in good standing with their medical association in Texas, New Hampshire, Washington State, Hawaii, Florida, whatever states you might be inclined to pick, and they move to New Mexico, they can practice here in the state of New Mexico. Now, there were liability protections in that for the compact, because there's these compacts across different groups of providers, and the trial attorneys did not like that. So the state, our legislature, is dominated by trial attorneys. I call the trial attorneys one of the three legs to the Democratic Party stool when it comes to their special interests. The trial attorneys, government employee unions, and radical environmentalists are the three legs of that stool, and the trial attorneys flex their muscle this session. There was also a standalone bill on reducing the generosity of our malpractice law in New Mexico. That also was not really even heard, barely, much less moving through the process. Not even included in the Freedom Index, unfortunately, because it didn't get far enough to be included. And that's one of the, realistically, that's a limitation that we have. But, you know, if a bill just dies, withers on the vine, unfortunately, there's limited ways to rate that or highlight that. But you got to educate people, and that's what we're doing right here.
Paul, and I'm not sure if this is, let me just go there. On the economy, you wrote that it's, you know, that we're too dependent on both oil and gas and the federal government. Is that a lack of economic development at a state level that's just not happening? Obviously the governor would, is that an appointed position when it comes to economic development around the state? Is there just things not happening there that should be?
Yeah, well, first and foremost, I'm not a fan necessarily of the economic development profession, because my view is that if the legislature does their jobs and passes good policies, You don't need to pay somebody to go out and schmooze and bring people in. That may not necessarily be accurate. I'm not averse to the idea that we have an economic development secretary and some staff. There's still regulations and dots to put on the I and T's to cross. But in general, economic development should be driven by having good policies in place. And the simple truth is that we don't have good policies in place. We are a poverty-stricken donut in the Southwest, in an area surrounded by states that are thriving and growing and becoming stronger and stronger, while New Mexico passes more and more bad laws every single year with very, very little in the way of positive growth coming in our state. So it's a it is something that could and should be addressed, and it also could impact, our medical provider shortage. Well, what's causing that? Obviously, I mentioned medical malpractice. I mentioned the occupational licensing and the lack of compacts. But if you're a doctor and you are thinking about coming to New Mexico, you look at the school system. Well, not a great draw there. You look at the crime. Well, we know what's going on there, especially here in Albuquerque, where the National Guard's been called in by the governor to address our out-of-control crime. We know that there are a lot of different obstacles to people who might want to do business in New Mexico, and that includes medical providers. So those kinds of things make it unnecessarily difficult to do business or bring people to New Mexico to do business.
Hey, listen, if you just tuned in, Paul Gessing with the Rio Grande Foundation, riogrande.org.
Foundation.org.
Riograndefoundation.org. Thanks, Paul. Is walking through some of the blog posts he's put at errorsofenchantment.com. We just kind of wrapped up a look at what didn't happen that should have at this session. Any more on that before we go to a break, Paul?
Well, absolutely. First and foremost, we mentioned the economy. We mentioned healthcare provider shortage. There was nothing done to address the EV mandates that are going to be in effect next year. The education system did not see any.
Did California back off on the EV?
No, and that's the problem.
Okay.
Federal government did, but not the state of California. And constitutional liberties are. Governor still maintains the ability to put New Mexico into a public health emergency at the drop of a hat with no legislative input one way or the other. And also, of course, gun rights were under attack, Second Amendment, during this session. Although, as with so many other things, it could have been much, much worse.
Yeah, and there's a lot more details in that blog posting. We'd encourage you to go to errorsofenchantment.com and look for that. We're going to take a quick break and come back with more with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation after this on ABQ Connect. Thanks for joining us. Hey, our friends at Johnny and Friends, New Mexico, are preparing for their third annual golf classic. It's happening on Thursday, May 1st. Whether you golf or not, what a great time to get out. It's going to be at Sandia Golf Club. It's a four-man scramble. I think it starts at 8 a.m. that morning on Thursday, May 1st. And they'll have lunch and a presentation by Johnny and Friends New Mexico. And then the award ceremony for the event. Proceeds from the event benefit Johnny and Friends New Mexico Family Retreat and Warrior Getaway specifically, which we've talked about when we have them. If you want to find out more about those retreats and getaways, go to Johnny and Friends, J-O-N-I, and then spell out and. So it's johnnyandfriends.org/new-mexico, and really some great work. They have a great time taking families and warriors, veterans down to Lincoln County at Lone Tree Bible Ranch for those getaways and retreats, and it's for a great cause. They're also having a respite evening at New Covenant Church coming up Friday, May 9th. That's a free event. It's where volunteers from – this will be at New Covenant. They take over the care of the person affected by a disability, and it frees up the family and care team members to pursue other things for the evening. Details on that respite night for Johnny and Friends New Mexico are on the website at nccabq.org for New Covenant Church. That's nccabq.org. Paul Gessing in studio with us, a post-legislative session update. And in our first segment covered a lot of what didn't happen and should have during the session. And you can find that blog posting at errorsofenchantment.com. And Paul, we move on for a look at things from the session. Some of the worst things that passed during the session.
Yeah, now we're going to talk about just a few of the things that are the worst.
There's a long list.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's par for the course, but we can't get to every single thing. But I'll put forth a few highlights or lowlights, as the case may be.
Right.
HB 12 expands the red flag law of the state of New Mexico on gun rights. So it makes it easier for specifically the police to kind of ignore due process in taking guns away from people. That's HB 12. That's already been signed by the governor. Another bill that unfortunately passed and was signed, HB 6, it is a subsidy for trade unions in the state of New Mexico. So New Mexico has a business incentive called an industrial revenue bond. It gives a very big tax advantage on your property taxes. Well, that costs the state money. It costs the taxpayers money. But we can argue whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. What they're doing, though, in this legislation is requiring that any projects brought to New Mexico through these laws have to have a prevailing wage payment structure. Prevailing wage is on construction projects, typically only applying to government projects like roads and bridges, where we get stuck with a bigger bill for less roads, less schools, less bridges, because you're overpaying disproportionately for those construction prices. You know, 25-30% increases in the cost of these projects.
And often to companies from out of state.
Well, you're bringing labor in from out of state oftentimes. Yeah. So unfortunately, that passed and was signed by the governor. That was HB 6 again. Also SB 59, same basic concept. A couple of others. One, we mentioned the healthcare provider shortage. HB 586 sets the government in charge, specifically the healthcare authority secretary, with approving transactions, including mergers and acquisitions, that change the leadership of a healthcare entity. So, unfortunately, not much happened to actually improve our medical provider shortage issue. But now, if a company is bought or sold that runs a hospital here in the state, now they have to go to the state and get the blessing for that merger acquisition. It's just another way you're going to discourage investment, because if now you have a governmental appointee sitting there saying, oh, well, I don't think you should be able to sell your company to this other company, that's going to give people cold feet about investing in New Mexico and health providers. Oil and gas royalty rates, SB 23, those increased. That's on specifically state lands in the Permian Basin. And then one that I know you'll love, Steve, is HB 64, providing in-state tuition and access to financial aid for students who may or may not be citizens of the United States. So giving in-state tuition to people who aren't even in the country illegally. Again, HB 64. Oh, and I should mention dishonorable mention, HB 450, the capital outlay bill. This is the one that includes another $10 million for an abortion clinic located near the border of New Mexico and other states. Kind of surprisingly with this one, we're talking about Raton. So Raton is, if you follow I-25 all the way up to the Colorado border, you don't think of blue Colorado as a state that's restricting abortion, but apparently the governor and the legislature felt it was worth putting $10 million aside. Instead of building roads, building bridges and schools, they are building another abortion
clinic. Actually kind of surprised, with what you're saying as far as the shade of Colorado and the size of Raton, that it wasn't put in Springer, which is just down the road. You're basically in Texas.
Springer, New Mexico being, well, Springer's, you're talking, the eastern side. Springer's just down the road. I don't really get it, but nothing that these people do really makes sense in many cases. So
yeah, and either way, horrible. Another abortion clinic. And let me mention this since we're on the topic, CareNetABQ.com. Go find out more about the work that they're doing to save lives in that arena. It's CareNetABQ.com. Go ahead, Paul. I'm sorry I interrupted.
That's okay. Well, just to be clear, there's a lot of other bad things in the bill. $10 million for a film school at CNM to subsidize further the already heavily subsidized film industry. Another $4 million for runway and infrastructure improvements at the spaceport where Virgin Galactic hasn't launched for over a year. And at $1.5 million for alternative fuel and charging stations for New Mexico's EV school bus fleet.
So Richard Branson can take off smoothly, but the interstates are a little bumpy.
And I just want to clarify that the Rio Grande Foundation is a financial, economic policy organization. We don't take positions formally as an organization on abortion, but I think once you get into government funding of the issue, it becomes a very clear and straightforward issue. And it also is something that appeals, or depending on your approach, frustrates more people across the partisan spectrum in terms of the abortion issue. They don't think, large numbers of people, a majority, don't think that government funds should be used to pay for abortion, especially abortion clinics, to serve people in other states. I mean, that's just insane.
So during the session, there were some bills that were put out of their misery. And you've listed those at another blog posting at errorsofenchantment.com.
Yeah, and of course, the big one, the one that we were thrilled that did fail, was HB 11, the paid leave proposal, revised during the session. We kind of gave a blow-by-blow on this one throughout in other conversations, but it wound up heading to the Senate Finance Committee one Saturday and died on an 8-3 vote. That was huge.
That was scary. Mm-hmm. What do you account for that one not making it through? Did people finally realize that this is going to be the largest tax increase maybe ever in New Mexico? Or
well, first and foremost, the bill had in its revised form passed through the House and was on its way through the Senate. It had gone to tax and was approved in tax. Then it went to finance. And to be fair, finance is the committee that most has a grasp on the dollars and cents of a lot of government proposals.
It's the ramifications
also,
of this.
Yeah. It's also led by George Munoz, who is among the more moderate Democrats in the legislature, George of Gallup. And he had a information hearing a few days before the final hearing and the final vote in the Senate Finance Committee, where he had the analysts who were working on that bill come in and sit in front of the committee, not the sponsors, and just answer questions about the financial viability of the plan and some of the reports and details of that. And that is what we had, quite frankly, brought forth as our biggest concern, is just, where's the money going to come from? You're paying out $3,000 each month for 3 months to parents of new babies. Where's that money going to come from? What if we have, like we've had recently, a stock downturn? Are there any alternative sources of revenue? Is this plan actually going to be solvent in the first place? And basically, we'd said we didn't think so. The senators on the Finance Committee wound up agreeing with us. They basically came to the same conclusion. And so it was an overwhelming 8-3 vote of the Senate Finance Committee in opposition to this legislation. So next year is the governor's swan song 30-day session. To her credit, the governor never said whether she supported or opposed this legislation. So it wasn't like she was there pulling the strings behind it. We don't even know what a future paid family leave bill might look like. Is it going to be closer to the original concept or closer to what was ultimately rejected with the working families, welcome families, requirements and regulations there on paid family leave and the $3,000 a month for the children. So whatever they do in the future, we can at least rest assured knowing that this extremely harmful bill did not pass.
Okay. Any other of the bills that did not pass you want to highlight before we go to a break?
There's some other important ones, but really, I think
that's a big one.
We got that one, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, if you just joined us, we're visiting the full hour today with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation. You find out more about the organization at riograndefoundation.org. And the blogs that we're covering today, the articles that Paul has provided at heirsofenchantment.com. We're going to take a quick break and come back with more after this on ABQ Connect. All right. We're back with Paul Gessing on ABQ Connect. We're going to get to one or two topics in this segment. First, a look at recent APS Vistas data reinforcing New Mexico's NAEP findings. Is that the ratings where we land educationally on a national basis, Paul?
Yeah, so the National Assessment of Educational Progress, or NAEP, is the nationwide assessment given to the statistically representative sample of students from all 50 states, Washington, D.C., and DOD schools. And it's the one, unfortunately, where New Mexico comes in last in fourth grade reading, fourth grade math, eighth grade reading, and eighth grade.
How many years now?
Well, it's the second cycle in a row, and those cycles are 2 years apart, with the exception of a three-year hiatus they took during COVID. There was a little bit of a hiccup, obviously, you can imagine there. And of course, the COVID hiccup also really caused, and I should reiterate that it wasn't COVID, it was the governor's policies relating to COVID that had such a negative impact on New Mexico's students.
Is that what fell under the emergency?
We talked about last segment, that we shouldn't have one person in charge of those emergency declarations. Yeah. But the VISTAs is a state report, and it goes into a little more detail. First and foremost, it's given to, I believe, all the students, at least all the students that show up.
Is that an independent group that does that?
I don't know who actually administers the test, but it's the New Mexico state test. And this has changed over the years, and I don't give a lot of credibility to state tests because the NAEP is the way to go. That's the one that can reliably compares various states amongst themselves, whereas New Mexico does something with its test and other states do something with their test. But I think there's a few academic-oriented things. For example, they look at the districts. APS, Albuquerque Public Schools, saw a 2.9% decrease in graduation rate, 2% decline in math, 1% drop in reading proficiency, and a 13% drop in regular attendance in the latest report. Now, that's what I want to focus in on, because here's where I think it gets kind of shocking, which is that only 50% of students in APS go to school 90% of the time or more. So basically, if you're going every...
let's say it again.
9 out of 10 days of the school year.
15%.
You're really going full time.
Yeah.
You know, if you're missing every 10th day, and they don't break it down by how many kids are missing, you know, 11 out of 100 days or, you know, slightly more, but that's the cutoff. But the 50% of the students at APS are going to school 9 out of every 10 days. Now, that is obviously problematic. And, you know, while I disagree with her on a lot, the Albuquerque Teacher Federation President Ellen Bernstein in the article noted, ever since the pandemic, our whole culture thinks school is optional because obviously and controversially, we sent the kids home. Well, gee, who did that? And, you know, obviously the number one culprit is the governor by a long shot. She's the one that really held the cards there. She did not have to do it, and she did it. And we criticized her at the time, repeatedly, regularly, often on these airwaves right here. Ellen Bernstein, though, was hardly a critic. You could go back and find data to this effect. And the unions, by and large, across the country, were among the leading proponents of virtual school and keeping kids out of the classroom for over a year. So it is a little bit ironic there that this teachers union president is kind of crying these tears about the fact that no longer do some families see school as something you just have to go do every single day. And instead they kind of, oh, well, don't worry about it. Just stay home, do whatever, play video games. And I think that is a real issue, but the blame is squarely on this governor.
Yeah,
100%.
Let me say this too. Although, you know, we need to count on our leaders in government to do what they can to improve the education in the state. We've had on this broadcast, you know, and part of parents at home helping their kids, whether they're in public school, private school, or homeschooled, is that the parents are able to come alongside and help the kids. ReadWest.org is another organization for adult literacy, not only, you know, just basic literacy, but with computers and home finances and so much more. ReadWest.org. And then if the kids are going to be home and homeschooling is something you're considering, CAPE New Mexico is preparing for their convention coming up May 1st and 2nd. It's actually 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. The 1st is a Thursday and is the free night at Legacy Church on the west side. You can go to cape-nm.org for details about the upcoming homeschool convention. loosely related, but since we're on the topic of education, I wanted to throw out those resources to the listeners.
Absolutely. And I agree with you 100%. Ultimately, your kid, if they don't go to school, you the parent, are responsible for that. And so you should make sure, whether it's a Christian school, if you're at home doing it, you should definitely make sure to do a real homeschool, or at APS. While I have plenty of issues with APS and the education they offer, they cannot teach your kid if they do not, that kid doesn't show up to school.
Yeah.
So absolutely, the teacher, the parents, I'm sorry, do play an important and critical role in that. But when it came to shutting down the schools and shifting the culture,
yep,
the governor really is the one who had called the shots. And unfortunately,
agreed,
it had disastrous impacts for children across New Mexico. I'll just say one more thing. While we as a country have long had this taxpayer-financed education system, as anybody who's ever planned an event like we do, we have speakers and whatnot, we know that if you have people pay ahead of time for a luncheon and an event, they're overwhelmingly likely to show up, because they don't show up, well, they're out, whatever, 50, 40 bucks. I really wish that we had a model that put more of the onus and obviously the choice on parents for choosing and paying for the school that benefits them and their children the best. Now, I understand there could be a limited number of people who can't afford the school, and then you could have a government program to take care of them. But America went down the wrong path when we decided to essentially make education taxpayer-funded, free and compulsory. I think we would value education a lot more if there was some skin in the game from the families. But like I said, getting past that, it's a long way in terms of where we are politically.
Well, on a national level, international level, Paul, as we change topics, so many of the conversations around the water cooler are on Trump's tariffs. We've talked a little bit about that during our Friday financial update with Brian Cochran, and we will again tomorrow, by the way. Make sure you're tuned in for that. But you've written a blog posting on errors of enchantment, Trump's tariffs, a New Mexico perspective, how it affects us right here.
Yeah, and there's a few things I need to get out of the way first. One is that tariffs are a tax. They are a tax on items that are brought into the country from wherever they come. So we need to understand that reality, and Rio Grande Foundation takes a very strong stance against taxes at the state level, the federal level. We're for limited governments and lower taxes. So
maybe I'm simplistic in that area. Where I can, I'm going to avoid those taxes by choosing to, use companies and services available here that don't have to go through things like the tariff. And I can't say yet how much, I'm not realizing that affects me, maybe that's very simplistic.
Well, that gets into a second point, which is not necessarily directly related to the broader point, but it is worth noting, yes, that whether you are somebody who supports kind of these broad-based policies on tariffs, or whether you are like me, a critic, we do have a global supply chain. There are some things that simply can't be grown in the United States.
Right. Even if they're made here, they're getting parts from,
by and large, coffee and pineapples. And yes, parts. Our Intel plant, I know, does a lot of business with Israel. And Israel's a unique case because they eliminated their tax against the United States. And tariff and Trump did not reciprocate necessarily with Israel. But on that note, I think it is critical, and I think it's important. I think it will happen possibly by the end of the 90-day period, that Republicans in the U.S. Senate and possibly the House will join with some Democrats or some Republicans with Democrats to say, hey, one person, the President of the United States, cannot make these massive shifts. I'm not saying that, you know, obviously America's had tariffs on the books and we used to have even bigger tariffs before we had a personal income tax and all this
stuff. We're kind of ripping off the Band-Aid.
But it should be done. Well, that's the question is, now we ripped off the Band-Aid and we put it back on and now we were just putting, you know, something on China. Tariff policy should be done with Congress as in their involvement for two reasons. One is it's the right way to do things, just like the governor and her emergency orders. You shouldn't have the legislature excluded from that at the state level. At the national level, Congress is supposed to be in charge of making tariff policy. But also the slowness of the congressional action allows businesses some time to adjust. We are being whipsawed right now by this administration, who I like a lot of what Trump has done on a lot of issues. I vehemently disagree with him on this one because he is very quickly taking us from, okay, massive tariffs on everybody, then now down to 10%, except for on China, where we're now up to 125%. Now, if you've built a business on bringing things in from China, you can argue, yeah, that may even be immoral because of the slave labor, et cetera. I get it. But who's to say that this policy can't change dramatically or on a dime with regard to what is happening in China? It's just we need a coherent policymaking structure, one that doesn't cause these massive shifts. Plus, you know, something that's been a problem in Washington for a long time is insider trading, because politicians know before everybody else when they're going to be passing an impactful piece of legislation. I'm not saying anything is happening on this tariff issue, but when you, through the stroke of a pen, are imposing new policies, new tariffs like this, and resulting in the shifts of trillions of dollars in a single day, based on the rise and fall of the stock market, it is something that could be tempting for anybody. And it doesn't have to be Trump. It could be Trump's orbit. You know, somebody who knows what he's doing could say, well, I know tomorrow he's doing X on the tariffs, and so I'm going to make sure to buy stock. So there's a lot of problems with the way this is being done. The credibility of the United States and our markets is at stake. I think it's critical for Trump to do things the right way if he is going to do them. And I prefer that when it comes to tariffs, he uses this strategy at least to get to a zero tariff position, not a higher tariff position with regard to other countries.
Now, Paul, that seems like a lot of conversation we could have in any state. Any more specifics when it comes to the blog posting you put in regards to the New Mexico perspective, how it impacts us directly here?
Yes. So specifically on New Mexico, tariffs are a regressive tax, meaning that they are charged at a similar rate, like a sales tax, like the gross receipts tax. You don't pay a higher rate when you make more money. In fact, a higher percentage of your income is taken up by the tax. So because New Mexico is a poor state, it is going, you know, to the extent that we have these tariffs, they are going to impact New Mexico at a higher rate, and they're going to be focused more on poor, low-income New Mexicans because of just the way they work. And then depending on Trump's strategy, and we're kind of waiting to see what actual strategy they have, you know, if the strategy is to get to zero tariffs, I'm more willing to back that. If the strategy is to somehow use the tariffs to try to bring manufacturing back to the United States, I don't think that's realistic, but it will happen in certain instances. And we've already seen some of those instances where manufacturers have said, oh, we're going to build cars, or we're going to build this, that, the other in the United States. But New Mexico, not a manufacturing state, meaning to the extent there are benefits, to the extent there are jobs brought back to the United States, those jobs will likely not come to New Mexico. And finally, there's energy, of course. And we know that China is now in the crosshairs in terms of their tariffs. There's increased tariffs by China on U.S. energy and possibly the elimination of the U.S. as a source of energy for China. This is a growing market for states with a lot of energy, like the state of New Mexico. We've talked about our growing energy sector. Energy prices have kind of bounced around. I believe they rebounded a little bit yesterday, but the price of a barrel of oil had gone down from $70+ to closer to $60. If we go into a recession, if the economy goes downward in terms of its overall performance, that will negatively impact energy, negatively impact New Mexico. So there's a lot of moving parts. This is extremely complicated stuff, and that's why it needs to be so delicately handled by the administration.
All right. If you just tuned in, we're visiting with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation. Go to riograndefoundation.org for more on the organization and the topics we're covering. The posts that the blogs that Paul has written are found at errorsofenchantment.com. We're going to take a quick break, come back and talk what, Paul, maybe a little bit on the Freedom Index.
Sure.
And
we got a few minutes left to talk about that.
Okay. We'll come back and cover a little bit more after this on ABQ Connect. Hey, thanks for joining us on ABQ Connect. A reminder, over the weekend in the pulpit at Calvary Church, Jeremiah Johnston will be in the pulpit, and he's going to be bringing the next message in the series we're currently going through, Benefit of the Doubt, which Frank Turek added to that in the last week, of course, being in town for the Unshaken Conference and then staying for the services. But Jeremiah Johnston, along with being a part of bringing this Shroud of Turin experience, which starts on the 12th, by the way, or a couple days away from that. It'll be in the lobby at Calvary Church, Albuquerque, Osuna, west of Jefferson. Free to come and check out the exhibit. It's a museum-level quality. It's just going to be a quality exhibit on the Shroud of Turin. The elements of crucifixion will be able to be checked out, and just a lot of great education. Regardless of how you feel about the Shroud, you may change your mind about what you think about the Shroud, or it just may be very compelling and thought-provoking content to check out. It's the 12th through the 21st, which is the Monday after Easter. And with Easter in mind, reminder, at UNM Stadium, University Stadium at 7:30 is the sunrise service. With special music from Mac Brock and Calvary MSC, and of course a message from Pastor Skip Heitzig. Whether or not you attend Calvary, this is a community event that so many people go out to, anywhere from 10 to 22,000, I would say, in the years I've been, get out for the sunrise service, sometimes depending on the weather or what have you. But let's pray for great weather a week from Sunday and that you can get out and enjoy that. The details about the sunrise service at easterabq.com. And as I was saying, whether you attend Calvary or not, a lot of folks get out for the sunrise service, then go to their own place of worship for the service there as well. Paul, just a couple minutes, but I wanted to throw it back to you. You did write a post on the final Freedom Index scores for 2025 legislature.
Yeah, those are, again, available at riograndefoundation.org. You can find out where your legislators come down on the Freedom Index and how they came down on individual freedom and liberty during the legislative session. I'll read just quickly our scoring technique. Bills are rated on a scale from -8 to +8. -8 is reserved for the most liberty-depriving legislation, +8. For legislation considered to be among the best at advancing freedom. These are floor votes only, and those votes are compiled as the legislature votes on the floor. The very highest vote, we had a lot of bills this session, a lot of votes. Representative Randall Pettigrew from Hobbs scored 202 in the House, 196 for John Block of Alamogordo. Unfortunately, nobody here in the Albuquerque Metro was among the very top performers.
Not a surprise.
Yeah, we have a pretty liberal political area. Stephanie Lord always does a great job. She's in the East Mountains, technically not Albuquerque. And then Nicole Chavez, Nicole Tobiasen here in the Albuquerque Metro proper, Albuquerque City proper. Top performers in the Senate, and they vote on different votes, so it's worth knowing that. Jim Townsend of Artesia got a 62. The Senate was not as high scoring as the House this year. But in the House, the very worst scoring legislator was Andres Romero. He is an Albuquerque representative. So a pretty massive number of bad votes that he took in this legislative session. He also was chair of the House Education Committee and refused to hear school choice related legislation throughout the session, even though that directly doesn't count against him. It just gives you an idea of where the guy stands, which is not in favor of freedom, especially in the education
Paul system. Thanks for joining us. I do want to make sure to let people know that you have written you provided expert testimony on the Government Accountability to Taxpayers Act.
Kinda, bill.
New Mexico Doge, kind of. Yep. Go check that out at errorsofenchantment.com. Paul, let's do it again next month.
Sounds good, Steve. Thank you.
Right. Thanks for listening to ABQ Connect.